20. Less than gods. Desperate revenge and battle dangerous to less than gods. On the other side uprose Belial, in act more graceful and humane. A fairer person lost not heaven. He seemed for dignity composed and high exploit. John Milton, Paradise Lost. The rope is still slack, Matthew said, after some interminable amount of time had gone by in the graveyard. He was very pale. Cordelia was worried about him. James's passage into the other world seemed to be sapping his strength. Cordelia had come as close to the archway as she could. She'd thought perhaps she could glimpse James through it, but she saw only a view of dead ground and broken trees and a red moon rising. What if something's happened to him? Matthew asked. You told James to yank on the rope if he needed to get out, said Cordelia. He knows what to do. She glanced down. She could see where his faint footprints led up to the archway and abruptly vanished. She reached out to touch the space below the arch experimentally. Maybe there was a weak spot in the barrier. There was not. It was as unyielding as granite. Through it, she could see the individual grains of sand stirred by the wind of another world. It seemed so close. There was a crack as the rope pulled taut. Cordelia whirled as Matthew shouted out, the rope whiplashing forward, yanking him off his feet. He hit the ground hard on his back, struggling as he was dragged toward the archway. He scrabbled at the earth, trying to slow his progress, his clothes catching and ripping on roots protruding from the ground. He slammed into the archway hard, just before the rope went slack. He rolled away, groaning, as Cordelia ran toward him, unsheathing Cortana. She dropped to her knees beside Matthew. There was dirt and blood in his hair. She caught at the rope, raising her blade. No, Matthew rasped. James! He didn't want her to cut the connection to James she knew, but being repeatedly slammed into the barrier between this world and the next would kill Matthew. Cordelia knew that, too. Even if Matthew didn't care, she did. She brought Cortana down, cutting the rope around Matthew's waist. Matthew rolled onto his stomach, struggling to his knees, just as Cordelia seized the severed end of the rope, wrapping a loose coil around her wrist and gripping as tightly as she could. Cordelia! Matthew reached for her. The rope jerked taut again. The force was incredible. It yanked Cordelia sideways, nearly impaling her on her own sword. She cried out as she was dragged toward the archway. She saw the barrier getting close as the rope was pulled through it. The space below the arch shimmered. She rolled, twisting her body around, raising Cortana in her hand. She was moving faster and faster. She remembered the way the sword had embedded itself in the granite of Tower Bridge. And she heard her father's voice, a painful sound in her ears. This is a blade that can cut through anything. She felt the hilt pulse against her palm. She heard Matthew shout, and she whipped Cortana forward, angled toward the archway, as if it were so much paper she could slice through. There was the sound of something shattering as Cortana drove through the barrier between this world and the next. Cordelia screamed as shards like plates of glass flew past her, each containing an image. She saw a beach and a bleeding moon, an underground cave, a citadel on a hill, a demon rising up before a watchtower. The shards skimmed past and vanished. The rope went slack, leaving Cordelia's wrist and hand burning. She rolled over, choking and gasping. She was in the shadow realm. The sky above her was riven with grey clouds, hanging heavy like blocks of granite. Everywhere stretched dunes of ash and sand. The whitened bones of strange animals, long dead, protruded from the earth. Daisy, said a familiar voice. The rope fell from her hand as she struggled to sit up. Kneeling in the sand beside her was James. He was white-faced, the shadows under his eyes like bruises, his cheekbones streaked with dirt. "How are you here?" he whispered. "How are you possibly here?" "Cortana, the blade, it cut through the archway." "Daisy," he breathed, and caught her in his arms. She had not expected it, and she let go of the hilt of Cortana in surprise, which was fortunate, as she might otherwise have stabbed one or both of them. His cheek pressed against hers. She could feel his heart pounding. "I never thought I would see you again," he murmured. "Daisy, angel." She wrapped her arms around his neck. "James." It was likely only a few seconds that she was in James's arms, but it felt like all time and no time at all. She pressed her lips against his soft hair, just as a sound like a crack of thunder echoed overhead. James bolted to his feet, drawing Cordelia up with him. "Go back, Daisy," he said, gazing down into her face. "You've got to cut your way back. Get out of here." The sound like thunder came again, closer now. "James, no. I won't leave you." James turned her loose with a groan. He caught up Cortana, pressing the hilt into her hand. Her fingers closed automatically around the grip. "I know what Belial wants now. I promise, there's nothing you can do." Her hand tightened on Cortana. "Only if you come back with me," she said stubbornly. The sound came again. It was not thunder, but it seemed to echo through the earth. "I can't," he said. The wind from the desert had risen, blowing his black silk hair across his forehead. "I must destroy it. It is the only way to end this." He touched her face. "Go back, my Daisy. Tell Matthew." A roar split the night, shaking the earth beneath them. Cordelia gasped as all the dunes around them suddenly blew apart. Sand exploded upward, blotting out the stars. The earth broke open, and something clawed its way free, roaring like thunder. Cordelia raised her hand to cover her face. When she lowered it, her skin and hair gritty with sand, she blinked and stared. Where before there had been empty desert, the Mandacore demon, three times the size it had appeared on the bridge, loomed above her and James, its bulk dividing the sky. The consul's mansion in Grosvenor Square had been built in the style of Georgian times, pale stucco swathing brick to create a pillared facade reminiscent of ancient Rome. It was a big house, the tops of trees brushed against the windows on the fourth floor. For Thomas, it had been a place he had played with his friends since he was very young, long devoid of the ability to impress or alarm. Or so he'd thought. As he descended from the carriage and began to climb the broad steps to the front door, anxiety settled in the pit of his stomach. He and Lucy had broken every rule in the Codex, and now he had fled straight to the consul's house. He must be mad. He thought of James, of Lucy and Matthew, of Cordelia. None of them would have had a moment's hesitation about walking straight up to the front door. He thought of Christopher, dying in the silent city. Alone in the darkness without his friends, the poison burning through his veins. Christopher, Thomas's cousin, and the brother of his heart. Thomas bolted up the stairs and hammered at the front door. "Charles," he called. "Charles, it's Thomas Lightwood. Let me in." As if Charles had been waiting by the entryway, the door opened immediately. Charles wore a crisp black suit, his red hair slicked back. Thomas felt a mix of hurt and anger, as he always did in Charles's presence these days. Once Charles had only been Matthew's annoying older brother, rarely thought about. Now Thomas saw the way Alistair looked at Charles and felt a dull pain. "If this is about Christopher, I know no more than you do, said Charles, looking impatient. He's at the Silent City. I believe Matthew has gone to the Institute to be with James. I suggest you do the same. He started to shut the door. Without thinking, Thomas jammed his considerable shoulder in the gap between the door and the frame. I already know about Christopher, he said. I need to use the laboratory downstairs. Christopher can't, so I will. No, said Charles. Don't be ridiculous. People are dying. This isn't the time for playing about. Charles? Alistair appeared in the entryway. He was in trousers and shirt sleeves and was jacketless. His bare forearms were lightly muscled, his chin lifted in that arrogant tilt he affected, even when no one was looking at him. Let Thomas in. Charles rolled his eyes but stepped back from the door. Thomas half stumbled into the entryway. What is it that you want to do? Alistair said. He was looking at Thomas, his dark brows knotted. Thomas explained Christopher's idea for an antidote quickly, skipping, of course, all the bits that involved illegal visits to greenhouses. I just need the laboratory to see if it will work, he finished. Alistair, Thomas, honestly, said Charles. Perhaps you mean well, but this isn't the time to be doing rash and silly experiments. I'm on my way to meet with the Enclave. I don't have time to stay here and make sure you don't blow up the house. Thomas thought of Christopher, shy, clever Christopher, and the years and years of quiet determination that had made him an expert at what he did, respected by Henry, far more capable than he was ever given credit for. Thomas clutched the box that held the Malos root to his chest with determination. My sister and my cousin have both been struck down by this thing, this demon poison, Thomas said. My sister is dead. Christopher is dying. How can you think I am not being serious about this? That this is rash or silly? Creating an antidote is the only way that we can save those who are still living. The Enclave, Charles began, buttoning his jacket. Even if the Enclave locates and kills the Mandacore demon, that won't help those who are ill, said Thomas. It won't help Ariadne. Charles's mouth flattened into an irritated line, and for a moment Thomas had the bizarre feeling that he was going to say that he didn't care about Ariadne. He saw Alistair give Charles a dark sort of look, almost as if the same thought had occurred to him. Thomas cleared his throat. Someone once told me that we need to stand back and let people do what they're good at. And Christopher is good at this. I have faith in him. This antidote will work. Charles merely looked puzzled, but Thomas hadn't said it for Charles. He looked at Alistair, who had been putting on a pair of gloves. Alistair glanced up casually without looking at Thomas and said, Charles, let him use the lab. I will remain and make sure he doesn't burn down the house. Charles looked flabbergasted. You do that? It seems the best course of action, and you know I have no interest in another Enclave meeting. I suppose not, said Charles a little reluctantly. All right, come when you can, then. He reached out a hand toward Alistair as if it were habit, then dropped it quickly. He and Alistair regarded each other with an awkwardness that felt like a pinch at Thomas's heart. Charles started down the steps. Halfway to the bottom, he turned and glared. Destroy nothing, he said to Thomas, stalked to the foot of the steps and vanished round the corner. We had best get to the lab, Thomas began, starting toward the main part of the house. Stop, Alistair said. Thomas froze, more surprised than anything else. Alistair's eyes were chips of black ice. I don't care a whit about the lab, he said. I want to know where my sister is in all this madness. Where's she gone? Highgate Cemetery, said Thomas. Entrance to the Silent City. Bloody hell, said Alistair. Why? You know what, never mind why. It'll only make me angry. I'm sorry, Thomas said. Not that she's there. If there were danger, and I don't think there will be, Cordelia could defend herself admirably. But that all of this is happening, it's none of our fault, but I'm just... sorry. Alistair's gaze softened, and for a moment Thomas felt himself back in Paris, hands in his pockets, talking in a low voice to Alistair Carstairs, as if it were only the two of them in all the world. "I'm sorry as well," he said, "about your sister. I had not gotten a chance to tell you before." Thomas's breath caught. "Thank you." "Do you really think this antidote will work?" Alistair asked. "I know it will." Alistair held Thomas's gaze for a long moment, then nodded. "And how long will it take to make it?"
20 minutes, if everything goes right."
Alistair exhaled.
"All right," he said. 20 minutes it is. After that, I'm going to find Cordelia."
At Thomas's puzzled look, he gestured impatiently toward the steps that went down to the laboratory.
"I'll help you," he said. "Let's get to work."
The mandacore was massive. It rose over them like the shadow of a bonfire. There was no mistaking it. Though it had grown tremendously in size, it had the same scaled, lion-shaped body, the same triple row of fanged jaws. There was something else about it that was new too. Here, in the Shadow Realm, its body was marked with 1,000 kinds of disease. As it moved toward them, its claws tearing the sand, Cordelia felt herself gag. Demons, as a group, were often disgusting. One trained oneself to cope with the horror. But there was something visceral about the markers of death that covered this creature. The ugly buboes of the Black Death decorated its arms, while its torso was bumped with smallpox, its chest cracked and runnelled with leprosy. Patches of its skin were eaten away with acidic rot, while others were red with scarlet fever. Black ichor dripped from its ears and mouth. James backed up, pulling Cordelia with him, but sand and dirt had piled up all around them in sheer-sided dunes. There was no real way to retreat. A sharp laugh rang out. Standing atop one of the dunes of sand was a man with pale grey hair and eyes. He looked young and startlingly beautiful, but there was a dark edge to his beauty. It was like the loveliness of blood in snow, or the gleam of white bone through shadow. He resembled James. Not in any specific way, but the shape of his eyes, perhaps, the bones in his face, the curve of his mouth. She had to remind herself. "This is Belial, Prince of Hell. If he reminds you of James, that is deliberate on his part. In his true form, he may look nothing like this." As the dust settled around them, he held out a hand toward the mandacore demon. The demon seemed to freeze in place as Belial turned to regard Cordelia with a cold gaze.
"Tisk, tisk, James," he said. "Bringing in reinforcements like this is cheating. What of the rules of fair play?"
James drew a gleaming short sword from his weapons belt. He was breathing hard and very pale. Streaked with dirt and sand, he no longer looked like a young Edwardian gentleman, but something more primal than that.
"Let her go back to our world," he said. "Just leave her be. I'm the one you have business with."
"No," Cordelia said sharply. "I won't abandon you."
Belial made a bored gesture, a lazy flick of the wrist. Cordelia gasped as black vines exploded from the earth, twining around her feet and legs, pinning her in place. James took a step toward her. She raised Cortana and brought it down, intending to slice through the vines. The blade vanished from her hand. She overbalanced, falling to her knees. The vines twisted tighter around her legs, and she choked down a scream. The pain was agonizing, turning her vision red. She heard James shout something and looked up through blurred eyes to see Belial, smiling a terrible smile,
Cortana gripped in his hand. He laughed at her expression. "In this realm, all things obey me," he said, "even a blade of Wayland the Smith." He snapped his fingers, the sound loud as a gunshot. The Mandacore demon reared back and sprang at James. James rolled to the side as the Mandacore demon sprang. He heard it hit the ground beside him, sending shockwaves through the sand and dirt. He rolled onto his back as it rose up over him, stabbing upward with his sword. He heard a grunt, and burning ichor spattered his arm. The demon reared back, giving him just enough room to spring to his feet. He could see Cordelia struggling desperately against the vines. James somersaulted forward, rolling over and over until he shot to his feet and spun around. The Mandacore was behind him, swinging a mace-like clubbed paw. James ducked as it whistled overhead, just missing him. His head ached and throbbed. His skin felt hot and tight, his wrist a burning agony. He backed up, trying to center his vision on the Mandacore. It was a shadow moving against a brighter light that hurt his eyes. Belial watched intently as the Mandacore circled, growling. Cordelia screamed a warning. The Mandacore had leaped into the air. It was peculiarly swift, despite its sores and wounds, claws outstretched. One raked James's arm. He spun sideways, blade whipping overhead, slashing across the demon's torso. More ichor splashed him, mixing with his own blood now. He tasted metal in his mouth and rolled into a crouch that spun into a lunge. The Mandacore threw up a clawed fist, catching at the blade of his sword. It howled, its skin sliced open as it gripped the blade and shoved, hurling James backwards. He hit the ground with enough force to knock his breath out of him. His sword skidded from his hand. He reached for it just as one of the Mandacore's feet slammed down on the blade. He rolled to the side as a racking cough seized him. Crawling to his knees, he spit up blood. He could hear Belial laughing. He wiped the blood from his mouth. The demon had reared up over him to its full height. It looked down through slitted red eyes. "Give up, James," Belial said. "Concede defeat, or I will order the Mandacore to strike you down." James rose painfully to his knees. He saw Cordelia, her hands bloody from tearing at the vines. He wanted to apologize to her, to tell her he was sorry for dragging her into this hopeless mess. She looked at him. It was as if she was trying to tell him something, trying to speak to him with her eyes. Her hands still gripped the vines. She hadn't given up, despite the blood, despite the pain. She was Cordelia. She would never give up. "Fight on," he told himself. But he couldn't rise. His body was shutting down. Shadows had begun to creep in at the edge of his vision. The Mandacore hovered above him, waiting for a word, a gesture from Belial. Belial, who ruled over all this place, who bent this realm to his will. James stretched out his right arm. The slash made by the Mandacore's claw was still bleeding freely. Drops struck the ground, and the sand drank them up. He thought he could hear the sand whispering, a soft murmur of sound, but perhaps it was only the poison in his body. "Shadows," the sand whispered, and James thought of all the things Jem had ever taught him. Focus, clarity, breathing. "You must build a fortress of control around yourself. You must come to know this power so that you may master it." Belial had mastered this world. He had bent everything in it to his will. "Every tree, every rock, every grain of sand is under my command." Each part of this realm responded to that which made Belial himself. Are you not my heir, my own flesh and blood?
James focused. He drew all his concentration down like light drawn through a magnifying glass. He bore down with his will, with his resolve, with the blood in his veins. He felt the ground shift and change beneath him. He reached out for the substance of this realm itself, the petrified wood of the gnarled trees, the teetering piles of bones, the dunes of sand, the shadow of the Mandacore. Belial cried out. The Mandacore demon surged upward. James bolted to his feet. He was funneling his own strength into the realm around him, and it responded with alacrity. The earth roared under his feet. The air exploded like dark fire from his hands, his fingers. The Mandacore staggered toward James, but the wind was full of swirling sand, creating a dark tornado. Belial shouted, but the Mandacore could no longer hear him. His voice was lost in the tearing wind. James stood with his arms flung wide to either side, wind and sand tearing around him like a storm in the desert. The Mandacore was howling and howling now. The whole substance of the realm had turned against it. Branches sheared free of trees, flying through the air like knives, bones became missiles. The demon gave one last howl as the dark, churning air rose up in a circle around it before plunging inward, crushing and tearing. The Mandacore vanished. Instantly, James let go. The wind quieted, the earth stilling under his feet. Debris pattered softly to the ground. He wiped sand and blood from his eyes, casting around desperately. The whole landscape had changed. The dunes had shifted. The sand had flattened out in front of him. He saw Cordelia then. She was lying, motionless, her red hair like a splash of blood against the sand. "Daisy," James said hoarsely, and started forward. He barely took a single step. Belial appeared in front of him, though he had not been there a moment ago. There were no tracks in the sand to show that he had crossed it to get to James. In his left hand, he clutched Cortana, its deep golden blade shining against his grey skin. "Well," Belial said, his face twisting into an approximation of a smile. "How very, very clever you are." James only stared. He could feel the exhaustion, the poison in his veins, waiting to rush back to claim him. He was desperate to get to Cordelia before he collapsed. "Get out of my way," he snarled, his voice rasping out of his dry throat. Belial chuckled. "Resist the devil and he will flee from you. It's a nice thought, isn't it? From the Book of James, too." He leaned toward James, and James could smell the burnt chalk scent of him. "I see that you begin to understand a fraction of the power you could have if you embraced your true heritage," he whispered. "The blood you share with me is far more powerful than the blood you share with Raziel. What power do you think you will have if you remain what you are now?" "Let me be," James said hoarsely. "I won't let you." "Enough," Belial roared. It was as if the demon had lost control of the features of his face. His eyes appeared strangely elongated, as did his mouth, stretching and stretching across his chin in a snarl of terrible rage. "You think I would allow you to let this body die? You have no choice. You..." Belial's left arm jerked backward. James's eyes widened as Cortana flew from Belial's hand, ripping free of his clawed fingers. Belial cried out, twisting around to see what James himself had only just seen. Cordelia standing behind them, her gear shredded from the knees down. Cortana flew to her like a bird. She reached out for her blade, and it thumped home against her bloody palm.
It's very rude to take someone else's sword without asking, she said. Belial's eyes narrowed. He raised his hand, and the ground under Cordelia's feet began to crack open. James staggered forward blindly, meaning to catch her before she fell, but Cordelia was steady on her feet. She sprang toward Belial, driving Cortana into the demon's chest in a single, smooth motion. Belial threw back his head and roared in agony. Daisy! James darted forward as Cordelia wrenched the sword back. Belial was still howling. Blood spilled from the wound, the colour of dark rubies, a shimmering red-black. James seized hold of Cordelia, who was gasping and shaking. Her eyes were fixed on Belial.
Fools! Belial hissed. You have no idea what you've done!
He raised a hand as if he meant to strike one of them, but it crumbled away like sand. Belial gaped as his body shuddered into pieces, like a child's puzzle tossed haphazardly in the air. He opened his mouth as if to roar or scream, but his face caved in before he could make a sound. He crumbled, dissolving against the air, as James stared in horror. Cordelia cried out. The ground heaved under them. The sky began to crack, red-black light pouring from the fissures like the blood from Belial's wound. The realm was crumbling around them. James pulled Cordelia toward him as the bottom fell out of the world. It was not like travelling by portal, Lucy thought, a whirlwind of sound and sight. The path the dead travelled was utterly silent and utterly dark. She could neither see nor hear anything at all. If it were not for Jesse's arms around her, the solid feel of his body, she might have thought she had lost the living world forever, that she had died, or been spun away into a terrible, featureless void. The feeling of relief when the world opened back up again was immense. Solid ground struck her feet. She stumbled and was steadied by the arms around her. She blinked the dizziness out of her eyes and looked around. She saw Jesse first. He held her close, but the expression in his green eyes was absolutely furious.
God damn you, Lucy Herondale, he said, and turned her loose.
Jesse, she began, and realized she had no idea where she was. She looked around wildly. They were in a clearing in the middle of Highgate Cemetery, under a canopy of cedar trees. It was dark, the gaps between the leaves overhead letting in little starlight. Lucy took a witchlight out of her pocket with shaking hands. Light blazed up. Now she could see tombs standing around them in a ring. The earth here was torn, churned up as if there had been a recent fight. Lying in the grass some distance away was a crumpled figure. Lucy gasped.
Matthew!
She tore across the clearing and threw herself down next to James's parapet eye. In the glow of the witchlight, she could see the bruises on his face. His jacket and shirt were ripped and spattered with blood. She fumbled her steely out of her belt, reaching for his hand. His parapet eye rune stood out stark and black on the inside of his wrist. Lucy bit back tears. Lucy? Jesse stood over her. Wind was rattling the leaves overhead, but neither his clothes nor hair moved in the breeze. He's all right. Unconscious, but not in danger. She pressed the tip of the steely to Matthew's palm and drew a quick irazzi.
How do you know?
If he were dying, I would see it, Jesse said quietly, and he would see me. Lucy finished the irazzi and saw it burn to life on Matthew's skin. He moaned and stirred, his eyes fluttering open.
Matthew,
she said, leaning over him. She slipped the steely back into her belt and laid her hand against his cheek, where the bruises and scratches were beginning to fade. His eyes fastened on her, pupils wide and unfocused. "Cordelia?" he whispered. She blinked.
"Math, no," she said. "It's Lucy."
She took his hand.
"Where is Cordelia? And James? Matthew, where are they?"
He started to struggle into a sitting position. "The archway," he said, and Lucy stared at him in puzzlement. "They went through. James first, and then Cordelia. She used Cortana." His dark green gaze darted around the clearing. "The archway," he said again, a note of panic in his voice. "Where is it?" Worried, Lucy glanced at Jesse. His jaw was still set with anger, but he hadn't walked away, at least. He hadn't disappeared on her. He shrugged. Clearly he hadn't seen an archway either.
"Matthew, try to remember," she began.
And then the sky tore, silently and unbelievably, down the middle. For a moment, there was a gap in the center of the sky, and through it, Lucy could see the constellations of another world. She saw shadows that rose into the air like towers of starfire, darkly blazing. For a moment, she glimpsed a pair of silver eyes. Then James and Cordelia hurtled out of the sky. Cordelia fell first. She sprang into existence like a falling star, appearing between one moment and the next, 10 feet above the ground. She struck the earth hard, Cortana flying from her hand. James followed a moment later, his body limp. He hit the ground beside Cordelia and lay motionless. "Get me up," Matthew said, gripping Lucy's hand. As Jesse watched, Lucy helped Matthew to his feet. James and Cordelia were lying a few yards away. Lucy and Matthew ran to kneel down beside them. Cordelia was already struggling to get up. She was filthy with sand and dirt. Her hair had come out of its fastenings and spilled down over her shoulders like fire. "James," she gasped, her dark eyes wide with fear. "See to him. Please, not me. The demon poison."
Demon poison?
Cold all over, Lucy bent over her brother. He lay unmoving, his hands black with ichor, perfectly pale and still. His wild black hair was stiff with blood. Cordelia tried to rise to her feet, but screamed out in pain and collapsed back to her knees. Lucy, kneeling over James, looked at her with sudden panic.
"Daisy?"
"It's nothing," Cordelia said. "Please, there must be something we can do for James." She drew in a shuddering breath. "He killed the Mandacore. He destroyed it. He can't die. It's not fair." Matthew was kneeling by James's side, his steely already in his hand. Runes given by one's parabatai were always the most powerful. Matthew's hands were steady as he scrolled healing runes over James's hands, his wrists, the base of his throat. They all froze, holding their breath. Cordelia, painfully, pulled herself closer, her scarlet hair hanging down to touch the green leaves on the ground. Her gaze was fixed on James. The Aratzes on his skin shimmered and vanished. "They won't work." It was Jesse. The anger had left his face now. He stood near Cordelia, unseen by anyone but Lucy, and there was a terrible sorrow in his eyes. "He is too close to death." Matthew gasped. His hand flew to his chest. He pressed there, hard, as if a knife had gone into his heart and he was trying to stop the bleeding. His face was utterly white. "He's dying," he said, his voice cracking. "I can feel it." Lucy caught at her brother's hands. They were cold in hers, unmoving. Tears spilled from her eyes and onto his face, tracing tracks in the grime.
"Please, Jamie," she whispered. "Please don't die. Please take another breath. For Mum and Papa. For me."
Give him mine, said Jessie. Lucy's head jerked up. She stared at Jessie. There was an odd look on his face, a strange, almost luminous resignation. What do you mean? Cordelia stared. Who are you talking to? Lucy? Jessie moved toward them. He knelt down, and the grass did not bend under the weight of his body. He drew the gold chain of his locket over his head and held it out to Lucy. She remembered what he had said after the fight on Tower Bridge, that he would have given his last breath to her, that it would have enough life force to empty her lungs of water if she had been drowning, as James was drowning in poison now.
But what will happen to you? She whispered.
She was aware that Cordelia was staring at her. Matthew was doubled up in agony, his breaths coming in ragged gasps. Does it matter? Said Jessie. This is his life, not a shadow of a life, not years of waiting in the dark. Lucy reached out her hand. It closed around the locket, and she felt it tumble into her palm, cool and solid. For a moment she hesitated, just for a moment, her eyes fixed on Jessie, kneeling in the grass. Then she looked down at her brother. His lips were blue, his eyes sunken into his head. He was barely breathing. Carefully, as if she were holding a glass containing the last drop of water in the world, Lucy opened the little locket and pressed the curve of the metal against his lips. There was a pause, enough time for a sigh. Then her brother's chest lifted with Jessie Blackthorne's last breath. His eyes opened, bright gold, and from the four crescent wounds in his wrist, black fluid spilled. His body was ridding itself of the Mandacor's poison. Lucy's hand closed tightly around the locket, so tightly the edge of the metal cut into her palm. Cordelia cried out. Matthew lifted his head, the colour returning to his face. He scrambled to James's side and pulled James into his lap. James, slumped against Matthew's chest, struggled to focus. Lucy knew what he was seeing. A boy leaning over him. A boy with hair as black as his own. A boy with green eyes the colour of hawthorn leaves. A boy who was already beginning to fade around the edges, like a figure seen in a cloud that disappears when the wind changes. Who are you? James whispered, his voice ragged. But Jessie was already gone. What do you mean, who are you? Matthew demanded. I'm your parabatai, you nitwit. He was busy drawing healing runes on whatever parts of James he could reach, which Cordelia could only applaud. She had no idea what Lucy had done to heal her brother, but that was not what mattered now. I didn't mean you, Matthew, James said. His eyes were closed, his dark lashes feathered against the tops of his cheekbones. Obviously. Matthew ran a ringed hand through James's wild hair and smiled. Are you going to tell us what happened yet? It isn't every day a fellow goes into a demon realm and then falls out of the sky. I'd think you'd want to share this experience with your friends. Believe me when I say it is a long story, said James. I promise you, we are in no danger now.
Did you really kill the Mandacor? Asked Lucy.
Yes, said James, and Cordelia destroyed the one who raised it. He held out a hand, scarred with cuts and filthy with dirt. Daisy, would you come here? He smiled crookedly. I would come to you, but I do not think I have the strength to walk. Cordelia tried to rise, but a white hot pain shot up her leg. She bit down on a whimper.
My leg is broken, I think. Very vexing, but I'm quite all right. Oh, Daisy, your leg!
Lucy leaped to her feet and raced over to Cordelia, dropping down and pressing her steely against Cordelia's arm. She began to draw an Arazi.
I am the worst, she moaned. The most dreadful would-be parabatai who ever lived. Please forgive me, Daisy.
As the healing rune took effect, Cordelia could feel the bone in her leg beginning to knit back together. It was not an entirely pleasant feeling. She gasped and said,
Lucy, it's nothing. I would have done it myself, but I dropped my steely in that other place.
Lucy pushed Cordelia's hair out of her eyes and smiled at her.
There is no need ever to do it yourself, she said. Runes given to you by your parabatai are best.
Ghastly, said Matthew. Look at them, affirming their eternal bond of friendship. In public.
I would question your definition of public, said James.
Lucy and Cordelia exchanged a smile. If James was capable of mocking Matthew, he was certainly on the mend.
This is a mostly deserted graveyard.
Hmm, said Matthew, in a surprisingly serious tone. His eyes narrowed. He rose to his feet, helping James to sit up against a tree. As Matthew paced to the edge of the clearing, James said,
Luce, let me talk to Cordelia for a moment.
Lucy exchanged a glance with Cordelia, who nodded and stood up. It still hurt to put weight on her leg, but Lucy's aratsis had mostly done their job. Lucy went to join Matthew as Cordelia limped over to James and sank down beside him under the shadow of a cypress tree. For a moment, as James's breaths had faded, Cordelia had seen life fork into two paths. One path in which James was dead, in which there was no meaning in the world, in which Lucy was heartbroken and Matthew destroyed, in which Thomas and Christopher were crushed, and the Herondale family never smiled again. And a second path, in which life continued as it was now, imperfect, confusing, but full of hope. They were on the second path. That was what mattered. That James was breathing, that his lips were no longer blue, that he was looking at her with steady gold eyes. Despite the fact that her whole body ached, she found herself smiling.
You saved my life, he said, just as you saved my sister's all those years ago. We should have given you a more warrior-like nickname. Not Daisy, but Artemis or Boadicea.
She laughed softly.
I like Daisy.
So do I,
he said, and reached up to lightly brush back a strand of her hair. She felt her heart nearly stop. In a low voice, he said, and when her cheek the moon revealed, 1,000 hearts were won. No pride. No shield could check her power. Layla, she was called.
Layla and Majnun, she whispered. You remember?
You read it to me, he said. Perhaps, now all this is over, we could read it again, together.
Reading together. Never had Cordelia heard of anything so romantic.
She started to nod, just as Matthew called out sharply, Someone's coming! I see witch light! Cordelia turned to look. Lights had appeared between the trees. As they came nearer, she saw the glimmer of torchlight. She tried to rise, but the aratsis were already fading. Her leg hurt too much. She sat back down.
Oh dear, said Lucy. The Silent Brothers aren't going to be at all pleased, are they? Nor the Enclave. We're probably going to be in awful trouble.
Maybe we could leg it, suggested Matthew. I am not going anywhere, said James. I will remain here and take whatever punishment is given out. The rack, the Iron Maiden, death by spiders. Anything but getting up.
I don't think I can stand up, said Cordelia apologetically.
Shades of the prison house begin to close upon the growing boy, Matthew intoned. Coleridge.
Wordsworth, James corrected. The lights swung closer. A sharp voice cut through the clearing. A familiar voice.
What on earth is going on?
Cordelia twisted around, trying not to move her leg. Alistair strode into the clearing. He looked disarmingly normal in an old tweed coat of her father's, as if he'd been out for a stroll. His unnaturally pale hair gleamed under the faint starlight. Beside him was Thomas, his hair mussed, carrying what looked like an apothecary's case.
"Why are you all on the ground?" said Thomas, and then waved his case in the air.
"The antidote. It's ready. What's the quickest way to Christopher?" There was a babble of voices. Matthew got to his feet and hugged Thomas hard, being careful not to knock the case out of his hand.
"Let's go alert the brothers," he said, and began to pull his friend toward the path leading to the silent city.
"You needn't come with me," Thomas protested, amused.
"Just in case there's chanting," Matthew said.
"I don't think there will be, mind, but you never know."
Alistair had been watching as Thomas and Matthew disappeared into the shadows between the trees. He shook his head and turned his attention back to Cordelia.
"B.I.," he said, bending down to swing her up in his arms. "Come along home."
In surprise, she looped an arm around his neck.
"But Alistair, I can't leave my friends."
"Leila," Alistair said, in an unusually gentle voice. "They're not going to be alone. Thomas and I took care of sending a message to the Institute. Look."
She looked and saw that the broad path behind the tombs was full of the glow of witchlight torches borne by a crowd of shadow hunters. She recognized a dozen familiar faces. Will Herondale, his torch casting bright illumination over his black and silver hair. Tessa, a sword in her hand, her brown hair loose over her shoulders. Gabriel, Cecily, and Anna Lightwood. Anna smiling, her hair as black as the gear she wore.
She heard Lucy give a short cry.
"Papa!"
Will broke into a run. He caught hold of his daughter and swept her into his arms. Tessa ran to James, dropping down to kneel beside him and fuss over his bruises and cuts. Gabriel and Cecily followed, and soon Lucy and James were surrounded, being embraced and scolded in equal measure. Cordelia closed her eyes in relief. James and Lucy were all right. Everywhere Cordelia could hear chatter. Gabriel and Cecily were asking after Thomas, and the others were saying that he was being taken to the Silent City now, where the antidote would be administered. Someone else, one of the Rosewains, was saying that there was still a present danger, that the demons might attack again, whether there was an antidote or not.
"The Mandacor has been defeated," Cordelia said. "It will not return."
"And how do you know that, young lady?" said George Penhallow.
"Because James killed it,"
Cordelia said as loudly as she could.
"James killed the Mandacor demon. I saw it die."
At that point, several people crowded toward her. It was Will who blocked their way, his hand out, protesting that they should not be bothering an injured girl. Alistair took the opportunity to slip from the clearing and into the shadows, still carrying Cordelia in his arms.
"I beg you not to get involved, Kohari Azizam," said Alistair. "It will all be sorted out soon enough, but there's going to be a great deal of nonsense first, and you need to rest."
"But they need to know it was James," Cordelia said. It was oddly comfortable to be carried like this, with her head against her brother's shoulder, the way her father had carried her once when she was very small.
"They need to know what he did, because they do.
Because Belial is his grandfather," she thought.
"Because when the Enclave finds that out, who knows what they will think? Because people can be foolish and cruel."
"They will," Alistair said, sounding utterly confident. "The truth is the truth. It will always come out."
She craned her head back to look up at him.
"How do you know the antidote works?"
Alistair grinned in the dark. "I have faith in Thomas."
"You do?" said Cordelia. I didn't think you even knew him that well.
Alistair hesitated. I watched him make it, he said finally. They had reached the Carstairs carriage now, with its design of castle towers on the door. Many more carriages lined the curb beside it. Because he had such faith in Christopher, he had faith in himself. I never quite thought of friendship like that, as something that makes you more than you are.
But Alistair...
No more questions, said Alistair, placing Cordelia inside the carriage and swinging himself up after her. He smiled, that rare, charming smile of his that was all the better for its rarity. You were very brave, Leila, but you need healing too. Time to go home.